Hello, and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Today, we're talking about accreditation and switching your accreditation organization, and it's a timely topic given that 2021 is a big renewal year. To discuss those ideas and answer some key questions, well-known accreditation expert Sandy Canali, who is the founder and CEO of accreditation organization, the Compliance Team, is here to talk with us. Sandy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I can't complain. Welcome to the podcast. As a lot of people know, Sandy's also a member of our editorial advisory board, and she's always on hand to talk about accreditation. So thanks for being here today, Sandy. Let's dive in. I imagine, as I mentioned, 2021 is an accreditation renewal year. This has got to be a big time for you guys at the compliance team, right?
Yes, to your point, 2021 is a huge renewal year, and this goes back to the Medicare Modernization Act that mandated everybody that wanted to bill Part B DMEPOS must be accredited by that 2009 deadline. So we had 9, we had 12, we had 15, we have 18, and now we're going into 21. Not only is it typically 2 to 3 times the number of providers that we see in those cycle years, but let's factor in a pandemic.
Just to make it easy.
You got it.
Okay, so providers have this renewal year, this 3-year cycle. They're renewing in 2021. So why might they want to change their accreditation organization? What would prompt them to do that? Would it be the pandemic? Could that be part of it? What's kind of key reasons for changing?
I think one of the main reasons is for whatever the case may be, the accreditor is not meeting the needs of the DMEPOS provider. Mm-hmm. So it could be that there's inaccessibility. We hear that a lot where nobody, I worked with so-and-so accreditor and many questions, I had hired new personnel. I wanted to know how to deal with this and how to deal with that. And they just were not accessible to responding to my needs. Mm-hmm. I would say that's number one. Certainly during the pandemic, business models have been forced to change. Well, some of the AOs are not as flexible with understanding different models. They're tied into that myopic view of the standards must be interpreted this way and this way only, and don't realize that a change in the provider's environment or how they deliver the product really needs to be flexible, especially during this time.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine asking those questions. I don't want to lead you, but those sorts of questions, do those become even more important, profound during a renewal period?
Absolutely. Because, typically, it's almost, I think of it as like Medicare open enrollment, where this is an opportunity. Every provider should be looking at what type of services they've received during a 3-year period. And certainly in the past 6 months, what has that accreditor done for them to alleviate their fears, their stresses during the pandemic? Have they been able to even reach out to the individual providers to identify if they need additional help, if they're doing okay, if they're serving the patients the right way? Have they done that? We've contacted each and every one of our thousands of providers that we've accredited more than once, more than twice, sure that they're staying on top of things and basically evaluating if they need us to do anything to help them.
Got it. And when it comes to, the whole pandemic, and this is something that you touched on in an interview that we just did for the November-December issue of our DME Pharmacy supplement. But, you know, the process of accreditation has changed in, you know, due to COVID-19. And I was wondering if maybe you could just kind of quickly highlight some of the key ways accreditation has changed during this pandemic, because some providers might not necessarily be familiar with that, those changes, because they're only now starting to renew.
Certainly. And for right now, we, you know, because of COVID being where it is on the rise, as opposed to where we want it to be with vaccinations around the corner, hopefully, we've created a real-time remote, a virtual type survey process. So everybody is going at. There aren't any on-site visits that we're currently doing. Understanding that once the PHE is indeed lifted, there will be a period of time when we will get out there based on what the restrictions are at that time and where they're at in their expiration date and so forth and so on. But, you know, doing real-time remote, we've been doing it now for several months and have great success with it. You know, not only from a safety perspective with preventing the spread of infection for our people as well as our providers and their patients, but also being able to review policies of the customer, doing FaceTime or whatever the app is to actually do a walkthrough of the warehouse, do a walkthrough of staff interviews and personnel files and all of that. So the level of comprehension that is still being done virtually is really amazing.
Yeah.
That we're able to do what we've done. And, you know, the feedback is like, oh my goodness, you know, you've covered everything that you typically cover when you're here.
You guys are going through and you're actually using like FaceTime or Zoom to do these site surveys.
Yes, exactly. So it is real time. That's why we called it real time remote, because it's not okay, virtual, just having a conversation and not really having the, you know, the guy or gal walk around their facility. We're actually doing eyes on the facility while we're on the application, which is key, as opposed to getting them to do a video and send it to us. Well, that's not quite right, because we're verifying and validating that they meet the standards. So we've got to do it real time. And it's surprising, but it works. Thank God for technology, right?
Yeah, perfect timing, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, like, and we weren't sure. You know, it's like, okay, what can we do here? And, you know, obviously we experimented and nailed it, and it's been successful both on our Part B side as well as our Part A side with our clinics that we accredit all over the country. So very exciting to be able to do that. So I think one of the other points that I'd like to make with mm-hmm. choosing an accreditation organization is choosing somebody that has that flexibility, that can rise to the occasion and make sure that their providers still don't skip a beat with the service, with, you know, getting the job done the way an accreditor should. as well as, you know, keeping our eyes on the provider and lending a hand to them during this troubled time.
So bearing that in mind, we've it's a renewal. We've got this situation where maybe providers are seeking out more flexible provider or flexible accreditation organizations. Or maybe they've, you know, like you said, they're changing their business model or they're expanding their range of services and add a category, who knows. But whatever the reason, so what questions, you know, during this time should an HME provider be asking prospective AOs about, you know, their accreditation? Should this pandemic and these changing needs influence that assessment?
Well, certainly, you know, again, not only the services that they're going to provide to the provider, but what kind of tools are they giving them, if anything? Are they just they have their standards. Do they give them any other kind of help with that? What we do here at the compliance team is give them self-assessment checklists to gauge their own progress. Well, as somebody that is switching accreditors, that's key because it identifies what policies and procedures you already have in place and what you then need. What is in that need column? Well, if you do need any, and I would think that if you're already accredited, you know, certainly coming to us, you would at least have 80 to 90% of what is necessary. We give templates for whatever else they need that they then can adapt to their organization's process. And that's key. Again, I can't stress the tools enough. The number one thing that our providers tell us is the most helpful are these self-assessment checklists, both starting from the beginning when they haven't been accredited, as well as in renewal or in switching from one AO to another.
You mentioned the checklists and the self-assessment. Are there other tools that you guys provide to help HME providers make that switch?
You know, whoever is a customer of ours has access to the back end of our website, and there are over 200 documents there that are either resource-driven, training links with OSHA or whoever, and as well as the templates that we talked about, not only for policies and procedures, but for plans, for OSHA plans, emergency preparedness plans, all the different plans that are required by the standards that perhaps they want to change up what they currently are using and would like resources, and we provide those resources.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about timing now. We're doing this interview on December 1st. You know, obviously providers have probably needed to be thinking about their accreditation renewal for a while now, since it's coming up on a renewal year. But what kind of deadline are they looking at? What are the timing issues here that providers need to be thinking about in terms of the renewal and switching and that kind of stuff?
I would definitely say that, 6 months prior to their expiration date that they should, if they're considering switching, they probably should start calling maybe 8 months before so that they can sign up with the new accreditor in that 6 month window. Mm. So the other thing that I failed to mention is our expert evaluators with the call advisors, that if someone signs up with us today, they're assigned an advisor. That advisor walks them through the standards, what they need to do, what they're doing currently, and how that can then be adapted to meeting our standards versus the AO standards. So you have that one-on-one assistance over and above templates. You have recorded webinars for training for them to then pass on to all their employees. So you have all these additional things that really are beneficial to a provider that has been accredited by somebody that has not provided this type of service.
Interesting. And so these advisors, are they compliance team staff, or are they third parties?
Oh, no, they are full-time employees of the compliance team. Oh. All of our employees at this point have been with us on average 10 years or more.
Oh, wow. So you
have expert evaluators, expert advisors that do the calls and the, we'll call it sort of mentoring. Uh-huh. They are not advisors that verify and validate that the customer meets the standards. There are like on-site advisors that are currently doing the real-time remote. So there's church and state between the advisors that help them, walk them through the standards in an educational way versus those that are evaluating them.
Oh, okay.
And that's key.
Yeah, that's interesting right there. I didn't even see that that window into the process, that if you're going to have on-site mentors, so to speak, they need to be separate from the people doing the assessments, because otherwise they might be tempted even unconsciously to sort of put their thumb on the scale.
Well, it's, the way we designed the program early on, and, have kept it that way for over 25 years. And, it works each and every time, and get a lot of customer satisfaction because of that, additional educational component, along with expert evaluators that are compliance team staff. So you have that consistency among the staff as opposed to contractors that have other jobs and are in and out of working for the organization.
Interesting. Okay. So, this isn't the only thing we're doing with you guys. We're doing this interview right now, but then you guys also are doing a video and Q&A for our December 8th democast, Sandy, which is pretty exciting. Why don't you tell the folks in the audience about that? What are you guys going to be talking about for your video?
Well, again, it's all about the compliance team process and how we're different from the other AOs. That's number one. And certainly right there, them listening to the accessibility and the flexibility and all of that, and the fact that at the end of the day, there's so many gold seals of approval with other accreditors that we're the only ones that give the exemplary provider accreditation. And that's what consumers know. They don't know what accreditation means. They know what exemplary means.
There you go. Okay. Well, and that's coming up again. That's Tuesday, December 8th. That's at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, 11 a.m. Pacific. So you can watch a demo video from the compliance team, and then ask the folks at the compliance team, including Sandy, some questions. So admission to that is free. So you can find out more about that at the HME Business website. That's hme-business.com. Again, that's hme-business.com. And just click on webinars at the top, and that'll get you to all the details on our democast. And then, Sandy, if folks want to reach out to you guys directly, how can they contact you?
So you can contact us either via phone at 215-654-9110 or our website, thecomplianceteam.org. Awesome. We would love to hear from you.
Okay. All right. So everybody out there, you can pick up the phone. It's fun talking to Sandy. Trust me. Sandy, thank you so much for being on the podcast again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, great information from Sandy Canelli at the compliance team about reviewing your accreditation and the sorts of things you need to think about if you're considering switching. And like she said, this is a renewal year, 2021, so make sure that you're way out ahead of this process and start doing your work now, because these AOs do get backed up during these renewal cycles, so you want to be on top of it. I'll say it again. We've got that demo cast coming up on December 8th, and admission to that is free, so check that out. You can ask Sandy Canelli questions live and direct. To find out more and register, go to hme-business.com and click on webinars at the top. And with that, I think we're going to wrap things up for this podcast. Please don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out our website. Again, that's hme-business.com. And subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter. And I'm at Postacute News on Twitter. And I should also mention that we've also launched the HME Business page on LinkedIn. Lots of people on the industry are on LinkedIn. So make sure to cruise over there. Just keyword search for HME Business. You'll find our page quickly and easily. And you can follow us there and get updated on all the news stories and things that we're doing. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Postacute News, or on email at dkopf@1105media.com. Again, that's DKOP as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll keep covering timely topics like accreditation renewal and many more. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.